Now it's time for Homegrown on 94.7 WPBC LP Charlottesville with your hosts Clinton Johnston and Leslie M. Scott Jones, Charlottesville's only radio show devoted to local arts. And now,
good morning, Sunday morning. Whether you're an art maker, an art breaker, an art faker, or an art partaker, welcome all, because all are welcome, of course, to Homegrown, a show about local art. I'm the one that they call Clinton, and I'm here with the person who is so dear, Leslie M. Scott Jones.
Aw, good morning, Clinton. How are you?
I am all right. Leslie, how are you?
I'm good. I have my grand dog here with me today.
Your grand dog with you. Your grand dog with you. Is that like your old homie? Is that... What up, my grand dog?
That is actually a term that was coined by my mother for the canine friend of a child. So I have the dog of my child with me today.
Using an inherited term.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, good.
You met her. Isn't she precious?
She is very, very nice.
I know. A little Chesapeake Bay Retriever. Just adorable. Just a little bundle of love is what she is.
I don't know names. I don't know, like, types. She's just... She's got fur and a tail and four legs, and she's fun to pet. That's what I know about dogs.
That's what you know about? That's it?
Yeah. Okay. All these people with, like, their designer dogs going around. I've got a three-haired brindled terrier, pointer mix, and she's about to. I don't know. I go, come here, I'll pet you, and the dog comes, and I pet the dog, and we have a good time. That's all I know about dogs. Like,
that's a very, very lovely and very simplistic way of being with them, Clinton. That's nice.
Didn't you mean simple rather than simplistic?
No, I said what I meant.
Okay. Moving on to the power of words. Time to start the show the way we usually start the show, which is with a parental advisory. If you are parental and not into being experimental, we have an advisory for you at some point in the show. We may say the word intubate. Intubate. We'll try not to, of course. We will, goodness gracious, we will do our best. But who knows what could happen in this wacky, wacky, wacky world of ours. A couple of days ago, Muhammad Ali was alive and we weren't thinking about him. Now, not so much. Not so much. Anything could happen.
What is it with 2016?
I just want to get in touch with all the people on December 31st, who are like, 2016 is going to be a great year. I've got a wonderful feeling about 2016. And I don't know what I want to do to them.
Right.
But I want to do something to them.
Right, because they were so wrong.
Yeah, either that or they're such bad, such horrible sadists.
Right.
Oh, my gosh. I believe 2016 is going to be a wonderful year. The carnage. The death. The ripping away of artistic ability. Oh, it will be marvelous.
Yes, as they wring their hands very evilly. Yes.
Indeed.
Yes.
Indeed. That's the way I picture CEOs being. Anyway. Speaking of artistic ability that hasn't been ripped away, let's go to our first guest. Joining us, local author. Do you want me to do the full artistic, the full name that you've got written down, or the name that I just the two names that I know? Yeah,
let's do both and compare and contrast.
Okay, here we go. Local author Jen Swan Downey. Hey, Jen Downey, how you doing?
My real self. Yeah, here. Thank you. I'm well. Nice to be here.
Good. It's great to have you here.
Did you notice I talked across the microphone as instructed?
I did. And the dials that we have noticed that as well. It's just, and the people at home will notice. Yeah. I noticed that you've got a couple of books with you.
Indeed.
So tell us about the series that you've been writing.
Yeah. Well, I started this series 5 years ago. And so far there are two books in it. And it's called The Ninja Librarians. And there's two books. The first one's called The Accidental Key Hand, and the second one is Sword in the Stacks. And it's about some crazy, can I say badass?
Yes.
We did say intubate, so I'm assuming badass is okay.
As long as you don't put them together, like intubating a badass.
No.
No one wants that image, yet now you have it. You're welcome.
Well, now I can go on. So, yes, these books are about some crazy warrior librarians who live in a library that stands outside of time, and they're... whole mission in life is to visit these different centuries that are attached to this library and try to do a good turn for writers who get in trouble for expressing a viewpoint or an idea. Maybe they are, falling to pieces in a dungeon, or they are threatened with a beheading, and these guys are the ones to help them out.
Can I just say... a group of warrior librarians who live in a library outside of time. I'm there. I'm hooked right there.
That makes me happy. Actually, that was the first image that came to me. That's what kicked off the whole storytelling, was this idea of such a place, because I love libraries, have since I was a kid, and I love weirdly put together places. And when I thought of lots of libraries that used to exist and got destroyed, kind of finding a little refuge all together and building one huge interconnected library, it was kind of compelling.
So do they get to interact with actual historical writers?
Yes. And a lot of the librarians are based on historical figures. And that was one of my favorite things about this series. As an idiotic first-time writer, I thought, of course, I could do a time travel fantasy based on historical figures and keep it all straight and
yes.
deal with 12 different centuries all at once and try to, accord with some semblance
yes.
of accuracy.
But that's not too adventurous.
No.
No.
But the great thing is it's for kids, and kids will follow you.
Oh, yeah.
An adventure like that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So how many librarians live in the library?
Well, let's see. Okay, the library, it's called Petrarch's Library, and it's existed for 400 years or so.
Oh, wow.
Outside of time. And there are numerous. We are talking, their organization is called the Librariad, and there are thousands of librarians. Your own local librarian could be involved in this organization. You just might not know it.
Would never know it.
That's right.
Okay, so I have a very good friend from high school who's a librarian. I'll bet she's in it.
It's entirely possible. She would never admit it.
Would never admit it. But she's one of those people that's like, when you first meet her, she's very like Mother Earth, you know, very like, you know, humble and everything. But every once in a while, a little, you know, badassery peeks out, you know.
She could very well be one.
So are you saying the first rule of the Librariad is you don't talk about the Librariad?
Yes,
exactly.
Just like Fight Club.
Yeah, there are some similarities there.
All right.
Yeah.
So apart from loving libraries, so you got the idea, you sat down to write, like, how did you go about constructing this completely different but awesome universe?
Through many drafts. I think I started with that image, and then this story came to me of a kid who, because I remember having this experience when I was young of being much more aware than adults thought I was, and I don't think I was alone in this, of what was going on in the world that was scary and sad and destructive. The Vietnam War, I was growing up in the midst of the civil rights movement. And so these images of people being harmed for expressing opinions, that is something that I took with me from that time. And so when I think of how I didn't know how to do anything about it, it was a very frustrating feeling. I started to imagine, well, what if this kid who, in her case, she starts out, she works with a theater group. Where did that come from?
Oh, wow.
But she's involved in doing stage combat. And up until the time she's 12, which she is in the story, that's all very satisfying. But then she starts to see that, and she kind of had an idea in the back of her head, like, I'm going to fight real life villains with my fake sword.
Yes, of course.
Yes. And then discovering this library is for her a way of making that desire to help and, you know, oppose the villains wherever they may be real. And she grows over the course of the series, at least the course of these two books, and I hope into the future, to begin to see why the librarians do what they do and actually decide she wants to put her energy where they put their energy.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. Do you want to read a little bit from one of them?
I would love to. I have two little excerpts. One is just a little bit about Dory, so you know who is at the heart of these stories.
Mm-hmm.
And then a scene with
I hoped that would be the one. Since we just talked about her, I was hoping I was doing a nice segue.
Oh, I ruined the fluid segue, and it was so good.
We are all about ruining fluid segues on this show. Don't
all right.
feel no shame about it.
Well, count me in. Okay. 12-year-old Dorothea Barnes was thoroughly unchosen, not particularly deserving, bore no marks of destiny, lacked any sort of criminal genius, and could claim no supernatural relations. Furthermore, she'd never been orphaned, kidnapped, left for dead in the wilderness, or bitten by anything more bloodthirsty than her little sister. Oh, don't even begin to entertain consoling thoughts of long flaxen curls or shiny tresses black as raven's wings. Dory's plain brown hair could only be considered marvelous in its ability to twist itself into hopeless tangles. She was neither particularly tall or small, thick or thin, pale or dark. She had parents who loved her, friends enough, and never wanted for a meal. So why, you may wonder, tell a story about a girl like this at all? Because Dory counted a sword among her most precious belongings. Yes, it was only a fake one that couldn't be relied upon to cut all the way through a stick of butter, but Dory really and deeply desired to use it. Not just to fend off another staged pirate attack at Mr. Louis P. Kornberger's Passaic Academy of Swordplay and Stage Combat, which met Tuesdays behind the library after Mr. Kornberger finished work there, but when the right circumstances arose, to vanquish some measure of evil from the world. And that's
great.
Our story.
I really like that introduction of that character.
Thank you.
There's a lot that's going on that you pack into that. Can you talk about your ideas behind Dory and what you wanted her to be and also didn't want her to be? Because it seems like there's a bunch going on there in both camps.
Yeah, I think I don't think most kids feel like they have a superpower. They may actually. They just haven't discovered it yet. I mean, they're young. They haven't developed a skill. It's easy to feel like you don't have anything to offer. I wanted to start off with a real kid. And because I think what she struggles with, even though there is a supernatural element in this book, there's a magic, which is the library, and the fact that you can get in and out of times. But that's where the magic stops. Everything else is about skills, you know, developing these library with a Y skills, which are, you know, besides attention to detail and bookshelving and great research skills, it also happened to be about repelling walls and being you're kind of a garden variety spy skills as well. So you can go undetected and all that stuff. So there was that. I wanted her to be average. And I wanted her to have a kind of unfocused sense of villainy in the world, a vagueness about it, that later she comes to hone and see in more specific terms.
Right, because there has to be a journey, even though it feels at the very beginning that you're sort of giving Joseph Campbell a little bit of the finger. Not going to do your hero with 1,000 faces, buddy.
Yeah, and you know what? You can't escape the journey. The journey is there. I just wanted her obstacles to be maybe a little different, than maybe some of the ones I've encountered in other books. I mean, it's certainly not unique. Other people have tried to get away, and there's nothing wrong with those obstacles of the supernatural. And but I wanted hers to be really political in nature.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What's the response been?
I've been lucky and I've been happy in terms of the critical response. Yeah, so my favorite moments are when kids actually talk to me about how they feel about it. Because the weird thing about children's publishing is you put a book out there and the people who review it and talk about it and blog about it, they're all grown-ups. And they are grown-ups that appreciate kids' books, but they're not kids anymore. And it's the first thing you really want to know. Like, did I succeed in doing the things that children's authors did for me? To like bring me along on a trip, Madeleine L'Engle's Wrinkle in Time.
Right.
You know, what she did. The visit to that planet where everyone is doing the same thing at once, and her kind of parable about oppression and tyranny was something that stayed with me forever. It's powerful what you encounter at that age. So.
Yeah. Right, right. Yeah. And that is, especially Wrinkle in Time, that's a chilling book. There's something, it gets you. There's something, I, I, Did I try reading it again recently? I encountered it again in some way. I can't remember whether I saw a video adaptation of it or whether I tried reading it again. Yeah. And it's creepy.
It is creepy. I think she was the one that said, and I'm going to get this quote completely wrong, so this is pure, oh my gosh, that's my phone. Well, we have some background music for this next bit.
That's okay. It's so far away from the microphone that the people out there can't hear it.
If I hadn't clued them in.
But it's great. You've given them a little bit of background.
Yes.
A little shot behind the scenes. That's wonderful.
Well, what I was going to say is I think Madeline Lingle said something along the lines of, if you're going to speak, try to talk about something difficult, or you're going to try to explore a difficult topic, tell it, you know, talk to kids about it through a story. So that's, I think, what I've tried to do in terms of intellectual freedom issues and censorship with these books.
Hello, this is Brian Weimer of the Ix Art Park, and you're listening to Homegrown, 94.7 WPVC.
15 minutes past the hour, and if you're just joining us, then welcome. This is Homegrown, a show about local art. We're sitting here with local artist, local author, Jen Swan Downey, talking about her books, her Ninja Librarian series that she's been working on. Make sure that you stay tuned after Homegrown, because, of course, we are followed by the great, the wonderful, the stupendous, the life-altering, maybe, Sunday morning wake-up call with your host, Rick Moore. Today, he's going to be talking to Sue Friedman from the Alzheimer's Association. And I think that I should be applauded for not making any really poor taste jokes about the Alzheimer's Association. There you go.
Great. All right.
Maturing just a little bit every day.
Right here. And everyone was here for it. That's what's important. That we got to share this little moment with you. I'm a writer as well. So I know how like scary and horrible it can be to sit down to write a novel. And there's always people saying, giving you advice about how to go about that process. So what do you think about that advice that they always give? Oh, it has to be a solitary place, and you have to have a safe space to write, and you have to have time, and you know, all of these things, you know, write what you know, and all of that. What's your take on it?
I think, like, as with any guideline, they are only sometimes applicable. It depends who you are and what works for you. I my own experience belies a lot of the garden variety advice that I've seen or I've heard, and some has happened to correspond to what did work for me, and I had to learn in terms of, say, plotting, that best to, for me, have my ending really clear before I began to lay out my story, which is something I know earlier in my life, and just writing in general, it wasn't something I did. In that case, that is a good piece of advice, I think. But again, for someone else, for me, it was good advice. For someone else, they might really not like to write that way. But I think eventually in the process, you're going to have to
do that. Well, I think it also depends on what your story is. I mean, if you have a very intricate storyline with lots of characters and lots of things happening to all of those characters.
You've read my book.
You need to kind of plot it out and like, okay, so in chapter 5, this is going to happen to these 7 people and this is how I deal with it. Okay, now I can sit down.
I think I entertain my writing cottage mates vastly through the making of these books. They would, Dee Dee would take pictures of my ridiculous poster boards covered with post-it notes, laying out in, you know, line and graph detail exactly what was going on at each moment for the 14 characters that I had to deal with and the 11 plot lines. So, yeah.
See, maybe I'm too formalistic, but I think that even if you've got a really simple story, I think that you need that. I really do think you need to know how you're getting out.
I agree.
You need to know how you're getting out. I mean, it's I have written organically before, and it's sometimes it's a great way to get into something and to start exploring it. But eventually, I found that I had to come to a point where I decide, all right, where's this going?
And I lost a lot of time at various moments. I don't want to say I wasted the time. You learn things even when you end up developing a big chunk of draft that you don't that doesn't make it into the book. However, when you're working on a deadline, it's best not to indulge yourself.
Oh, yes, that evil real world.
Yeah, yeah. And it really does help. And I don't think it takes away anything from the, I don't know, the passion or the excitement of the writing to have plotted it out ahead of time.
Well, yeah. I mean, yeah. Art is, I think, and tell me if you agree, art is as much about flights of fancy and imagination and pulling in anything and everything as it is about skill and maps and schedules and
limitations.
And limitations.
I've worked with someone you'd probably know in town, Jennifer Hoyt Tidwell, on a production recently, and I remember her saying to me one day, with full, the complete enthusiasm and gusto, I love limitations. And, you know, we had encountered some problem in the production. I don't know what it was that was limiting us in that moment, but she had something there. And I think limiting yourself with some plot structure does actually free then in to go down those juicy creative paths within that.
So I am in the process of writing a sequel to my first novel. And I know that, you know, when I wrote the first one, it was very organic. It was just, it literally started as a short story and it just kept growing and I had no idea where it was going. And okay, so yes, it ended. That's cool. And then my mother actually read it and said, "This isn't over. You haven't talked about this and you haven't talked about this." And I was like, "Oh, okay. Sequel. Cool." And in the process of writing the sequel, two things happened. One, I had a very clear idea of where I wanted my two main characters to end up.
Mm-hmm.
And two, I'm having a lot more fun putting them into situations that are embarrassing and comical.
Well, there you go.
The problem is that I'm not sure how far I can stretch them, you know, because they're already known, and so I'm struggling with that. Did you have that?
Oh,
in writing the second,
characters consistent?
Yeah, keeping them consistent, or you know, and or choosing how they grow in the
change.
Second, like
sure,
yeah. How do you deal with that?
You worry that have I somehow lost the ability to speak in this voice? You know, when you sit down again to do it, but I didn't find that was the case. That never happened. It was the fear, but it wasn't the reality. If you imagine them once, you can imagine them again. I mean, sometimes it just has, you know, you play a little bit on a piece of paper, imagining how they're saying something or kind of reaction they'd have to a situation. But I think you'll find they'll come back. It'll come back. Yeah.
So the second book in the series is just coming out. Yeah. Ninja Librarians, Sword in the Stacks.
Yeah.
Do you want to read a little bit of that?
I would love to.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. In this book, one of the things that happens is within Petrarch's library, Dory made a friend who became her best friend. Her name is Ebba. She grew up in the library. Her parents lived outside of Timbuktu and had to flee to the library when their lives were in danger because of his role in protecting some writings. So they are great pals, and they are taking a practicum together called Principles in Librarianship, with a Y. And they were given an assignment by Hypatia of Alexandria, who is the director of the library, that they needed to choose an imperiled subject, and they would be allowed to run their own mission. So it had to be a small mission, class one, no class two or three, please. It had to be, like, the stakes have to be low enough that they would allow apprentices.
Of course. Right.
Naturally. So they got very excited. They did some research. They came up with what they felt was the most amazing mission. They're going to Washington, D.C., 1912. Ida B. Wells is there with her Alpha Suffrage Club from Chicago. They're going to march in the suffrage parade. The way history goes right now, she was told she could not march, being an African American, with the white women told to march at the end of the parade. She refused. She joined the parade. She just said, "Oh, fine," and then left, walked through the crowd and popped out and joined the parade exactly where she wanted to. However, the rest of the Alpha Suffrage Club didn't get to march, and she had brought this huge contingent of African-American women from Chicago to march. And so these girls decide, in the history as told in the library, they were hurt, their banners were ripped away from them when they tried to join the march, so they're going to go and protect them. So they come to class,
right,
and they propose this mission, and they're really excited, and they get their permission back, and they're handed a folder, and this is what happens. "Perfect timing," said Hypatia, as the runner put the folders down in front of her and evanesced again. She looked carefully at each folder and then laid one before each of the practicum members. Dorian and Abba exchanged curious glances as she laid theirs to rest between them. "Yes, the even eye," said Hypatia, "one of the most challenging principles to put into practice." She sat back. "Please open your folders." Eagerly, Dorian and Ebba complied. In each lay an identical piece of parchment, and on each a tidy hand had written "Training Mission for Dory Barnes and Ebba Gambo" at the top. Her heart hammering with excitement, Dory skimmed over the words. "Mission category, protection of printed material." All right, she thought. That'll be the banners carried by the Alpha Suffrage Club. "Wherein? London, England, February 1913. Dory read the words again. She frowned slightly. The parade that the Alpha Suffrage Club would try to march in was to take place in Washington, D.C. And then her frown cleared. Hypatia must have listed the wherein that held the spoke library they'd have to go through to get to Washington, D.C. She read on. "Imperiled subject. The National League for Opposing Women's Suffrage." She read it again. Who were they? And opposing? That couldn't be right. There had to be a mistake. She glanced at Ebba, who was frowning and squinting at her own page. Dory skimmed down farther. "Nature of threat. Copies of anti-suffrage review have been taken repeatedly from the doorstep of the National League for Opposing Women's Suffrage before they can be distributed. Mission. Prevent any further disappearances." Dory nudged Ebba. "Anti-suffrage review? But that's not what we proposed at all," Ebba said. "Excuse me," said Dory, looking up, "but there must be some mistake. Our mission proposal was to help Ida B. Wells and the Alpha Suffrage Club at the suffrage parade in Washington, D.C., but this says our mission is to assist the..." She looked down at the piece of paper again. "The National League for Opposing Woman's Suffrage." "Indeed," Hypatia smiled. "I hope you'll forgive the subterfuge. To give you an opportunity to put the principle of the even eye into practice, the research department looked at the opinions and ideas your chosen imperiled subjects were trying to express and found each of you a substitute imperiled subject." "A substitute?" Dory repeated, not liking the way this was going. "Yes," said Hypatia, "an imperiled subject who holds opinions opposite to those held by your chosen imperiled subject." Ebba gaped at her. "You mean someone who doesn't want women to vote?" "Precisely," said Hypatia. "But we're girls," said Dory. "We don't want to help people who want to convince other people not to let women vote." "And that's exactly why you must practice doing so."
Dun, dun, dun! Ninja librarians, sword in the stacks. Jen Swandani, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
When and where can people get their hands on these wonderful things?
Though the official... release date is June 7th. It's actually already in Barnes & Noble, and you can get it at our local New Dominion bookstore on the downtown mall.
New Dominion Books.
And one other opportunity is on June 10th from 6:30 to 8:30. I'm going to have a book release party at Live Arts.
A book release party at Live Arts?
Yeah, on the beautiful terrace. And we will have an amazing group of sword fighters with foam swords who will show you how to attack each other safely and with a lot of fun. There will be twister games. There will be food and some music to dance to, because why not throw as many things into a party as there are into the book?
June 10th, Live Arts book release party for the second in the Ninja Librarian series, Ninja Librarian Sword in the Stacks. Jen Downey, thank you very much for coming on the show.
Thank you.
Homegrown, now you know. All right. It's 28 minutes past the hour. We're going to run through some more things you should know about that you can do in this wonderful artistic town of ours. Currently running now until June 7th. Speaking of writing, the Charlottesville Writers House Annual Fiction Writing Contest still going. You just have moments left. 3,000 word maximum stories with a beginning, a middle, and an end for writing writers 18 and above. Entries to be judged by Ann Beattie. Full information at writerhouse.org. Also currently running now until June 11th at Live Arts. Speaking of Live Arts, Dream Girls. They're your Dream Girls. Oh, and they'll make you happy. Go check it out before you can't check it out anymore. Also, speaking of theater coming to an end, Over the Mountain at the American Shakespeare Center. We're coming to the close of their spring season, so you just have a few days left to see Shaw's Arms and the Man, Oscar Wilde's The Importance of Being Earnest, and Shakespeare's Julius Caesar and the Life of King Henry V. Currently running now until August 21st, Yimar Duwara, Artist of the River at the Klugiru Aboriginal Art Collection. And speaking of the Klugiru, you've got, starting tomorrow and going through the rest of the summer, there's going to be a diverse selection of works on canvas, paper, and even eucalyptus bark drawn from the collection, looking at how these Aboriginal artists figure their relationship with their homelands. June 9th to 18th, Offstage Theater shows that Bar Hoppers was not just a fluke. Back with another production. It's The Maids by Jean Genet, done at the McShane House at 209 Maury Avenue. And of course, coming up June 13th to 19th, it's the Look 3 Festival. Look it up on Google to find out all of the Look 3 Festival events. And looking at just some of the musical options open to us, June 7th, it's the Michael Clem Trio at Ashlawn Highland. And also the Municipal Band of Charlottesville doing their summer concert series at Albemarle High School. June 8th, there's an open jam at Rapunzel's Coffee and Books. June 10th, Melissa Hansen Band plays at Wild Wolf Brewery. And Jamie Dyer plays at the Blue Moon Diner. June 11th, it's Maybe Tomorrow at Keswick Vineyards. Freight Paid at Pro Renata Farm Brewery. And after you see those Ferners or those Outsiders coming and playing at the Pavilion on June 11th, you can hit the Lake Street Dive After Party with the Southern Bells and Rooster Blood at the Southern Cafe Music Hall. And don't forget, June 12th, Veronica Swift playing at the Carrington Place Community Hall just off of Rio Road. Of course, every Monday, it's the Singer-Songwriter Night at the Local. Every Tuesday, the traditional Irish session at the Tin Whistle Irish Pub. On Wednesdays, you've got the Open Mic Night at Prairie Farm Brewery, Bob Bonetta at the Cafe Couture, and the Mike Rosensky and Jeff Decker Quartet at Miller's, and also Jim Wave at Blue Moon Diner. Every Thursday, it's the Woolen Writers Revival, hosted by Will Thomas Reed and Brian Craddock at Firefly. And if that's not your taste, then skip on over to the Downtown Mall, tread through the door at Miller's, and get ready for some John Dearth Quintet, because every once in a while, you just got to come down to Dearth. And that is just some of the wonderful artistic things going on in this wonderful artistic town of ours. If you are an artist and you've got things that you'd like people to know about, well, then please let us know so we can let them know. You can contact us at our Facebook page, www.facebook.com/homegrown/homegrownWPVC, or you can email us at homegrown947@gmail.com. Homegrown, show about local art. Yeah. Cool. So, 32 minutes past the hour, and we are here talking to you on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. Stay tuned after the show for the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call with your host, Rick Moore. He's been talking with Sue Friedman from the Alzheimer's Association. But before that, we've got our next guest. Coming at us, a light in the Charlottesville artistic community. Brian Weimer from the XR Park. How you doing, Brian?
I'm very good, and it's nice to be known as a light.
It's a light that is shining.
Well, there is that saying that it is better to light a candle than to curse the darkness. So hopefully I'm lighting a couple candles.
Really? I find a lot of people cursing the darkness.
I can spend a lot of time cursing the darkness, but and it's hard. It's hard not to be a little bit cynical, to be a little bit skeptical, and to try to channel that energy into something productive.
Cool. Tell us what's going on. How's the XR Park doing?
X is going kind of nuts.
Busy.
We have,
as you see, we make announcements, and I'm constantly announcing stuff going on at the XR Park.
Yeah, we've been having almost 5 events per weekend. I mean, I'm double booking things. And in a magical way, like somebody told me the other day that they might be bringing Godspell next year. And there are things that, like, I've always wanted to do at Ix. And all of a sudden, all I have to do is kind of think about it hard enough. And then somebody calls me up and says, hey, can we have a yoga festival? I'm like, that's exactly what I want. Okay, now somebody else can do it, because otherwise I'm going to explode if I have to do all of it myself.
Mm-hmm. So how much have you been programming, and how much have you just been fielding offers?
I originally thought I was going to be doing a lot of my own programming, but I'd say about 80% of it is what's just coming in through the door, whether it's CHS coming in and doing a musical ensemble. I don't know. There's a meditation week coming up that is just a dream come true for me. It's a whole retreat week at Ix. Almost every day there are like five different things happening there. You can juggle, you can sit and do single point meditation, and everything is just coming in, and I'm the guy who keeps the door open.
Wow.
But this weekend, I live on Grave Street in mm-hmm. Belmont, and we have a great porch culture there. And so people just kind of talk across porches, and some folks were gathering on one porch at the end of it near the bridge, PAI, and they were talking about wanting to have a Bernie Sanders fundraiser. And I happened to be walking by. I don't remember how it happened. They said, hey, Brian, do you think we could use the Ix? And I said, of course. You know, please, come on down. Now, we don't like to necessarily take sides politically, but you probably could guess my own political persuasion. And I was thoroughly radicalized by
down with
living.
The Trump. That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, I think we're all in that mode. But also, I just spent a year in Europe, and a lot of what Bernie has been talking about, I experienced firsthand.
Mm-hmm.
And also, hey, why not have an excuse to have a party? And now we've got like four bands coming. Actually, it's today from 2 to 6 p.m. We've got four bands coming. There's a raffle. There's an art auction. And it's just like, hey, you know, you want to be part of this process? Come on down. And I like the notion that it's participatory, because like art, like life and everything else, it's not a pay-to-play kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
That this is our future. So take part in it and step up to the plate, and you can look outside and, well, I don't know, the weather looks a little iffy. It's like, what future do you want? You know? And that future starts today. I felt a little bit bad. I mean, I'm a huge proponent of bicycle culture, pedestrian culture and all that. And unfortunately, like even this morning, I had to hop in my car even to come to this interview. And then you were sort of witnessing all
right,
the things
right.
that are being done on Route 29. And I think that they were important things to do. They're probably a little bit late to do them. But to see how much that we double down on this sort of auto culture, and we're trying to live our intentional lives. We're trying to be, you know, we're trying to support farmers markets and all those other, and the arts and everything else. But how often do we actually really do it? How often do we go see a play? How often do we go out and buy art and support the artists in this community? How often? The other day I went to Blue Moon Diner. It was such a wonderful experience that is going away in this culture. I just sat down. My wife said, hey, you know, let's go out and see if there's some music playing there. We love listening to Jim Wave there. And I was like, I looked out the windows, rainy. I was like, I don't know. But then I kind of snapped to her and said, yes, let's go. And Jim Wave wasn't playing that night, but we sat down. We had a dessert. Somebody was playing. And somebody had a birthday party there. And everybody got a piece of cake. And that was community.
That's awesome.
And that's really what I think makes Charlottesville great. And you can call it arts and culture, you can call it whatever you want, but to me, it's sharing. It's sharing a piece of cake, it's sharing music, it's sharing a story, but it's coming together consistently and getting out of our houses and getting out of ourselves and our old habits and establishing, well, some of these are the old habits that we used to have, and now we just, I don't know, you go to the movie theater and then you come home, or you got your home entertainment system. It's just like, And again, our porch culture mm-hmm. in Belmont, like, get out on your porches, play your music, share it. It doesn't cost anything.
Dude, I think you're an art wizard. Because art art magic just seems to start happening around you. I don't know.
Well, some of it,
I've been to Blue Moon Diner a whole lot. I've walked away rather cake-free, which is, you know, probably good for me.
I like cake.
No, but you did get a pancake with your face on it in Blue Moon Diner, so I think you've had enough magic in Blue
like
Moon
I said,
Diner.
I've been there a lot.
Yeah, you've been there a lot, that's for sure. So so you got five bands coming today.
Four bands. Yeah, a raffle, a silent auction, beer and wine. And even after it, it's like today, as if that wouldn't be enough to do a Bernie Sanders fundraiser. At 8 p.m., there's a play, Wings, that's being done that by Peter Ryan.
Wow, okay.
Talk about that, because we've been...
Yes, talk about that.
Right. So Peter and I go back. I filmed his play, Karate Tango, and he brought to me this play, Wings, that's based on the birds, Greek play. And it's about, again, these kind of paradigm-shifting things about how we behave in our culture. Peter pulled this play together, and I've been giving him the space to rehearse in, and I think this might be his last performance of this piece, at least in the near future.
Wow.
So if you want to watch it, come out and see it. And it's just a nice, it's actually a very sweet play. A lot of local folks are in it. And I'm always in awe of Peter's ability to, it's all of his original music in it. And to come out and experience that. So it's like today, I'm like, wow, I've got a Bernie Sanders fundraiser. I've got a play. Like upcoming, we've got this meditation retreat. We've got on Saturday 11th, we've got Fleaville. We've got Potter's Craft Cider. We've got a fitness event with Sweat X. We've got yoga. We've got Tai Chi. We've got drummers. And then later on, we've got X Rocks. It's a three women rock bands. We've got Look 3 is coming and doing a film projection thing, Virginia Film Festival. This is all this month is coming, and they're showing Beach Blanket Bingo.
Oh my God, I love that movie.
And it's just, I just love to see what comes. What do people want to do at X? And it's hard because, you know, we've got no funding. I'm kind of there. I'm literally there 80 hours. I just don't leave. But we're getting more volunteers. I've got three great interns this summer. And a lot of it, again, it's not about me. I keep the door open and I make sure that there's toilet paper in the bathrooms. But
which is important.
It is. But it's mostly what other people want to see happen in their community and for them to make it happen. I almost like the fact that we don't have much funding, because then it's an imperative that other people come and bring their things.
Right, right.
That I'm not going to program everything and say, hey, I set up this great thing for you. It's like, no, actually, you're going to set up that great thing, and you're going to be part of it, because that's what it's like living in this culture. You have to. Otherwise, everything's going to get really expensive.
Right. And stale, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. If we only have six or seven people programming every single art thing that goes on, mm-hmm. then once you've seen it, you've seen it. That's it.
Right.
Yeah.
And you shouldn't have to pay to play. I mean, after Europe, you know, you're in these piazzas and things, and just things happen. Mm-hmm. And actually, a really nice thing happened. I helped out filming for the Tom Tom Festival just recently, and I had really never witnessed it from beginning to end. And at the end of it, they had Porcella, which was a bunch of porch concerts in Belmont. And we literally stopped traffic with the amount of people that were in the streets. Chamomile and Whiskey came and played on my porch.
That's awesome.
And there were about 50 to 80 people just spilling out into the streets. People couldn't drive through, and it was great. It was just the power of people coming together that stopped everything to enjoy that moment and each other, and there's a magic in that. And the funny thing is that magic is free.
Yeah.
And it's within each of us to either open our doors or our porches or break out a guitar or even just sing yourself or just to be part of it.
Yeah, just to stand and listen and appreciate it.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And that's what's crucial to me. And I think it's crucial to, you know, things like this show. It's funny. And I'm not sure if those ideals are progressive ideals or conservative ideals. I don't think there really is an ism to attach to it.
I don't think so either. But I think it's something that's in all of us.
Yes.
And it just needs to be poked a little bit to, you know, mm-hmm. we just need to push that button in people to get it going.
Right. So even though the Bernie thing may be a Bernie thing, it might be a progressive thing, it's like, no, it's a cultural thing. You're going to be coming together, you're going to be sharing, and who cares what purpose? I don't know if Bernie's going to win at the end. And actually, it might not even matter, because maybe today is more important than the outcome at the end.
Mm.
That's, I mean, it's about process.
So have you had to turn anything away? Have you have there been things that come up where you've said, no, that's not X? Because I feel how open it is.
I don't really turn anything away. There are some things. We're contemplating a hip-hop thing coming up, and it's difficult because I'd love to have it. There are issues around it about how to run it properly. I mean, and it's like, well, you say, well, it's hip-hop, it's music. Well, it's funny. I actually, everything that comes through IX right now, we have to insure separately as a separate event. Mm. Ever tried to insure a hip-hop concert?
I have not tried to insure hip. Tell me about what it's like to try to insure a hip-hop
concert. It's almost impossible to do it, because, and it's just sort of like, and then you start to understand, like, oh, well, they only want to, I don't know. It's also hard to do a lot of things, period. There are things that I wanted to do. I wanted to do a farmer's market, frankly, at IX, and I can't, because I have to apply for a special use permit. It's going to take me 6 months to get, and it's going to cost me $2,000.
Mm.
And just when you try to do some things and you realize that there are systems, probably very good systems in place for certain reasons, but others you start to realize that, wow, there's a lot that I can't do, either because of insurance, because of codes, because of whatever. And I'm kind of trying to work through these things with the city or work through it with finances. There's always a way around it. I come from independent film production, and that's like a minor miracle just to get anything done.
Right, right.
So with me, it's like, let's find a way. I mean, our big motto at IX is possibility. So there's always a possibility. There's always a way to make something work. So for me, I just encourage people, bring your idea. We'll see how to make it. I'd say I probably dropped the ball on some things because I'm the only person there full time, really. So somebody wanted to do a fire circle or a fire pit and a building around it. And unfortunately, I got busy and I didn't get back to her for a couple of weeks. And she kind of lost interest. So there's some missed opportunities, probably. That's my biggest regret, is what I haven't been able to do only because we're understaffed and underfunded.
Hey, this is Keith Morris, Keith Morris and the Crooked Numbers. And you're listening to 94.7 Homegrown Radio.
46 minutes past the hour. You're here on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. If you're just joining us, welcome. This is Homegrown, show about local art, and we are talking to Brian Weimer, art wizard, grand poobah of the IX Art Park.
Well, it's funny. I just came from a college reunion, and people asked me what the heck I do now, and I had a very hard time describing what the heck it is that I do. I keep the door open, and I bring the chips.
That's a good thing. It's good to have chips, and it's good to have doors. So weren't you guys soliciting for funding recently?
We were, and we had a fairly successful fundraiser. I realized a little bit, too, that I have a hard time asking for things from people. And I have a huge commitment when somebody does give something to make sure that I follow through on it. And I wanted to be sure that everybody's money who was donated to it, that it was spent in the right way. And at the time, I was also, you know, we have a bunch of events. We have weddings coming up. We have some bar mitzvahs. And some of that was actually funding it. And I felt like, oh, maybe that'll be how it works. But also, I was seeing that it was working in this other way, like a potluck, that when people bring what they can, and I'm always like, actually, I was down here at the ASPCA rummage sale buying some outdoor furniture because I just wanted people to be able to just stay there. And I'm always on Free Cycle and all sorts of other things because actually I'm more interested in that sort of reusing, recycling, upcycling, because I think that is a mentality too that we really have to get into. We can't just keep on consuming.
Right. Stop buying new stuff.
Right.
Figure out how to repurpose something you already have.
Right.
And that is a concept that artists really gravitate toward because we never have money.
We have to.
We have to.
But I think it improves our art. I mean, if we had everything we needed, it would, I mean, it doesn't say it would make it too easy, but it would make us less resourceful.
Yes. Yes. And I think what a lot of people don't realize about people who create art is that it is work.
Mm.
It takes a lot of time and effort, blood, sweat, and tears to create something for someone else to enjoy, whether it's music or theater or a painting or a sculpture. Like, there's a lot of work that goes on behind it.
Completely. And that there's another huge thing that I will not leave out, that I think that artists really need to be paid. That
yes.
that we demand a lot of our artists. We ask them to do things for free all the time. Hey, will you come? It'll be good for promotion. Where I'm like, where are these people going to pay their rent? How are they going to actually create more art? Because art, actually, that was one of the things that came out of the TomTom thing, was the realization that art and culture is what attracts everything else.
Yes.
Whether you're coming from, and there are people coming from Silicon Valley, whatever, saying, oh, this is wonderful here because you have this great arts culture. And it's like, well, what are you going to do to it? Are you going to come and make it so expensive that those artists can't live here anymore?
Exactly.
So you have to look out for those things. When we build on West Main, what is it going to push out? And what's going to be left? You may say, hey, this is so, and it's one of my concerns about X2, that it might be a victim of its own success.
Personally, I'm hoping for a little shanty town of artists that'll be just right outside the city limits where we can go and then maybe be bussed in.
So what, are you going to be the mayor of this town?
No. I think I'm going to be the town drunk in the artist shanty town.
You're going to be the town drunk?
I'm going to be the guy sitting there saying, I was big in the day. Oh, yeah. You know, y'all talk about this art. Oh, yeah, I remember. Oh, yeah. Give me a dollar.
Oh, my goodness. The things that come out of his mouth some days. Okay. So if someone wants to bring an idea to you, how do they get in touch with you to do so?
Alas, Facebook is that virtual world that I spend far too much time. But I respond very quickly. So if you go onto Facebook and you send a message through there, then it'll come to me. Also, if you just send something to info@ixartpark.com, that comes to me as well. And I will field everything. I will give everybody the time and attention that their idea merits. And I think everything merits attention. I think that we spend a lot of time distracted. We spend it lost in, you know, Game of Thrones and who knows what. And that's fine too, but I think that we need to spend more time with our neighbors, with our community, with our artists, and create the community that we want to live in. And we're still in the process of creating this. It's funny. I like to think of myself as a progressive. I just put in a Google search, Charlottesville and progressive. 6 of the 10 entries were about insurance.
Oh.
I like to say that 2 of the entries were WPVC.
All right. Yes.
There you go. And 1 entry was about the Bridge PAI. But we need to think that, you know, we're more focused, you know, if we're recognized as a progressive community, that it shouldn't be for insurance.
No, it shouldn't. Not that insurance is a bad thing, but yes.
Well, it's funny because, I mean, what's happening today, the Bernie thing, I mean, a big part of that is about insurance. I mean, I can't hold an event without special events insurance. We wanted to have a rock concert there, and it was like, wow, it became too expensive because nobody's really covered. Anyway, and so politics, life, art, and culture, they're all mixed together. You cannot separate them.
Right.
And the way that you bring them all together is you come together and you participate. And hopefully that's what Ix represents, is a place that all of that can culminate, and hopefully a new paradigm will come out of it.
That's awesome. Thank you so much, Brian, for coming and telling us what's coming up. And we will definitely keep you on the list, so we will let people know what's going on. And thank you for coming and just sharing your wizardom.
Uh-huh. I need a hat.
Big purple one with like moons and stars.
I'm looking. Would somebody make me a big wizard hat? I would love that. I'm making an ask out to the universe. With stars.
I think I have my next sewing project.
There you go. Thank you very much for
Thanks,
having me.
Thanks, Brian.
Bye bye.
52 minutes past the hour. You're listening to 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. And this is Homegrown, or this has been Homegrown, a show about local art. But it's not over yet. We've got one last bit for you. And like Ollie's killer left, it's the one that's going to knock you down and not let you get up again. It's Leslie's weekly rant.
Oh, thank you, Clinton. So I decided that my rant this week was going to be about Snoop Dogg. I sat down yesterday and combed through the internet for the video he posted, for reactions from the producers and actors who worked on Roots. I did that partly so I could know exactly what he said and what the reactions were, but also so I could form my own opinion about his comments. I should tell you, full disclosure, I'm not really a Snoop fan. I like a couple of his songs. I enjoy every time he decides he can act, but mostly only for mocking opportunities. For those of you who don't know me, I can't support an artist who has shown themselves to be a horrible human being in some form or fashion. While I have nothing against his need to spend his entire existence high, sometimes in this particular society I see the merits that may bring, I do not like the way he talks about women in his music. I don't like that he stood by while Suge Knight terrorized and beat female artists during his heyday at Murder, Inc. I understand that in the environment he grew up in, these things were acceptable, but we all have to grow up at some point and stop acting and thinking of things as a child would. This fool took the easy way out and instead created a whole career around being a thug. And much to my dismay, the same kind of fools bought it up like they were eating ambrosia from the gods. I watched the video. I read a couple stories about it. I read and watched videos of actors in the series explaining why they took part in the project. I thought I was ready to sit down and write. Then something caught my eye. It was an article by a black man asserting that Snoop was right, that no one should watch Roots, and that that wasn't the only movie or show they should be boycotting. He went on to say that it was perpetuating negative stereotypes about black people as victims. He even claims that movies such as Selma, 12 Years a Slave, and now Roots give the Democratic Party ammunition to make black people in America believe they are still victims, that nothing has changed, and that the only way to fix anything is to create more government programs to help them. This man, and I use the term loosely, Lloyd Marcus, actually believes that knowing your history, being honest about your history, is a detriment. Didn't some philosopher say something about the consequences of forgetting history? Apparently, Mr. Marcus chose not to heed that warning. He says in the article, upon seeing commercials for the upcoming Roots remake TV series, my reaction was pretty much the same as Snoop Dogg. I'm not watching that crap. Like everything leftists produce today, I know the Roots remake is a political tool to promote Democratic Party narratives. America sucks. Government must become bigger and more controlling. Blacks should be paid reparations. I also wondered how the producer should include the LGBT agenda in the remake. Would the Kunta Kinte character in the Roots remake be transgender? End quote. There are so many insulting things in that statement. I don't know where to start. So he hates Roots. What you want to bet? He watches Empire, a show about a criminal music producer, or Scandal, a story about a black woman being fetishized by a white president of the United States religiously. These shows spread negative images about black people today and are not historically significant or even important. Y'all gonna have to excuse me for a minute while I channel my nana. How in the hell you fix your mouth to say that? Apparently, this is the same crap he's been spewing for years and has been called Uncle Tom for his words, which doesn't surprise me. Now, I don't condone calling anyone names to make your argument. Arguments are supposed to take place between two intelligent, well-versed people who argue point by point based solely on facts. So here's my argument. Roots is the story of one family's journey through the history of this country. I understand that it may be painful for people, especially black people, to watch. I understand it may be embarrassing and guilt-producing for white people to watch. I understand that this is where his reaction is coming from. No one wants to be constantly portrayed as property, stupid, inferior, victimized, raped, and beaten. Here's what he's missing. Once you get past all those feelings, the truth of the history hits you. What the actual contribution of African people was and still is to this country starts to be real for someone who didn't know the history. The story doesn't portray all white people as bad. There are more than a few slave owners who were not horrid in the story, and there are others who you just wanted to reach through the TV and punch in the face. Just like real life. The story is ultimately about the resiliency of this family and the African people. It's about how they kept their traditions despite being whipped and beaten. It's about how this family put family first above all and walked into a future brighter than the past they had endured. If you watched it, you may have felt something like I did at the conclusion. I felt an amazing sense of pride in them for surviving. I felt sad that those decisions made to stay alive had to be made. I'm not angry at white people. I don't feel like a victim. I feel like a Mandinko warrior, ready to take on whatever comes my way. Because let's face it, if Kunta could do it, then I sure as hell can. But in order to get there, you had to watch it. You had to let it wash over you. You had to drink it in and allow it to change you a little, make you a little more open, a little more understanding, a little more enlightened about what the ancestors had to endure to make sure we got here. This is the kind of art I love. It's something that is truthful and powerful. It tells a story that is important on many levels for young and old. It connects a new generation to the pride they should feel about their heritage. It may help explain to some white people how deep the scars of slavery go and why we can't, won't, and shouldn't just get over it. This is art that knocks you over, sits on you, and when you get back on your feet, you are changed. This is how art should be. And just so you know, Snoop Dogg posted a picture on his Instagram. He watched it with the whole family, and he liked it. And that's my weekly rant.
That's the weekly rant. You want to say something better, but you can't. Thanks to Jen Swan, Danny, Ninja Librarian, Sword in the Stacks, release party on June 10th at Live Arts. Thanks to Brian Weimer at the It's Art Park. That was Homegrown, and we're out of here. See you next week.
You've been listening to Homegrown on 94.7 WPVC LP Charlottesville. You can contact the show on Facebook by searching Homegrown Charlottesville. Be sure to tune in again next Sunday at 10 for Homegrown, only on 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville.